And on the line, we've got Don Sutherland from down in Tasmania, who's going to talk to us about living standards and nature, the new threat from the stock exchange. How are you today, Don?
I'm pretty good, Annie, and hello to you and all your listeners, and congratulations on what's been a terrific program this morning.
Oh, that's very fine of you.
Yes, well, I think it's about a month since I've been on, I think, and particularly last week. I'm finding it hard to keep up with what's happening because I think we are living in quite stupendous times, quite astonishing at times. Last week, I think listeners will recall that I often like to talk about the interacting crises, and I think there are five principal ones, and within those, probably the most important is the ecological economics dimension of the confluence of crises. And last week, I think in all of them, big things happened, and very important things, and including the crisis in human relations, where the struggle against racism and against misogyny, two dimensions of the crisis in human relations, intensified. There's some very positive developments, I think, for those of us who are anti-racist and who are anti-misogynist. It's a bit of a clumsy way of putting it. However, the two things that I think I feel capable of being able to talk about is the interaction between what happened with the new environment laws in the Parliament with what's happening in the economy, particularly one aspect of that being the stock exchange, the stock markets.
As they said, $59 billion was wiped from the Australian Stock Exchange, apparently.
Yeah, that's from the Australian Stock Exchange, and there is even bigger numbers were happening in the USA and other major share markets. And since then, it sort of stabilised and recovered, sort of. But we are now in a period of volatility in stock markets, and my hunch is that that's not very well understood what that means in our left and beyond that, in progressive organisations, particularly unions and environmental organisations.
Because there's a difference between the play money that the gamblers on the stock exchange are playing with and what happens in our real productive real life, isn't there?
Yeah, well, in a way, the way in which they do gamble and calling it play money diminishes the potential damage, havoc that it causes back in the real world. And in that article, I've tried to lay out just how that works. You see, when there is the buying and selling of shares, as has been, and the share market is going upwards, then superficially, that doesn't seem to be much damage being done back in the real economy. But when it collapses, when there's a wipeout, then that does reverberate that. And that's where we are now. We're in a period where it's fragile and it's volatile. And that will reverberate back into the employers, big and small, expecting and pushing governments to put downward pressure on living standards and to diminish government spending commitments about the environment and climate change. And this is a big point of struggle. And so what the...
So what you're really saying is that there's a very large demarcation between the interests of capital and the interests of ordinary people, with the the economy at stake, but actually the environment that we live in at stake. We need a new system, effectively.
See, in the real world, there are twin exploitations happening in any capitalist society like ours. And that is the exploitation of people and of nature. Now, they do not proceed in parallel, as most unions and most environment organisations think, even when they look across the divide and see that they're problems on the, you know, on that other parallel. In fact, they're interactive, and I think that we've got to develop a more powerful ecological economics, if you like, or a more powerful political economic ecology practice. That's what's coming out for me. When you look at what's going on in the stock exchange, it's not going to stay stable. The history of capitalism shows that about every 7, sometimes every 10 years, there is a not just wipeouts, but a big collapse in stock exchange values, and that does reverberate. And that means that governments have a huge choice to make. Will they act in a way that is entirely consistent with the requirements of big capital, or will they go the opposite direction and look after the people and look after nature? And we haven't yet had any situation, any of those previous crises have never delivered, never seen a government that sides completely with the people or with nature.
So beyond the role of government, you've kind of talked a bit in your recent article about the need for more union involvement and community involvement in marrying those concerns around the environment and the economy. So in practical terms, what can organisations like unions be doing to counteract some of this economic instability that you've been discussing?
Well, I think the very first thing that unions must drive is a lot more member education about the political economy of the world we live in right now. That means integrating into that the ecological issues about what's happening with nature, because nature is not infinite, it's finite. And every economic action is dependent upon taking stuff out of nature. And so that's the first thing, a much more serious political economy education by the union movement as it currently is with its current members, but then extending and pushing that. Now, that should be the foundation for a lot deeper consideration and engagement and involvement of workers in developing proposals for socially useful development. In other words, instead of saying that business leaders and business organisations, boards of companies are the only ones capable of coming up with future development proposals, that can also come from unions and their members. And that ought to have a tone of challenging and seeking to replace the momentum of profit-taking that lies in, of course, capitalist control over development.
What you're saying is changing the focus of what society's economy is supposed to be doing. So that leads into another thing that you put forward, which is resisting austerity.
Well, if we do, it's not going to be it. It'll be if and when it happens that there is a collapse, and it's hard to know exactly when it will be. The expectation will be to make the people pay, and that expectation will be put upon governments. And that means that there will have to be a rejigging of even the very modest and weak claims that this Labor government can make about fairer budgets. That is the relationship between taxation and spending. And so there'll be pressure on for austerity on the industrial wage and austerity in terms of taxation and social service spending. And we are seeing signs of that already. Just this past week, of course, the government has asked all of the public service department mandarins to begin reviewing their budgets, their current spending patterns, and identifying the items of least priority that might be sacrificed. Now, who knows where that will go, given that most of those mandarins are neoliberals. That's where they come from. That's the tradition they come out of. And so I can see downward pressure on the quality and quantity of services that go to the general public.
And this is at the same time as of an increase in public money going to corporate welfare to fossil fuel companies, basically.
Yeah, well, the corporate welfare spend is, this government is right into it, and there is very little quid pro quo for the public in that, except the expectation that will be more jobs. But there is a big contradiction there.
I don't think that's really floating anymore.
Yeah. It is absolutely necessary that there be loads of new investment, public and private, in socially useful technologies that will make a difference in the future for both people and nature. We will need new technologies to not just slow down global warming, but to reverse it. We will. Now, the problem is that the more of that private investment that occurs, and I'll come back to just with a quick fact about that in a minute, but the more that occurs, then it requires, if profits are to be made out of it, which is what the employers are looking for, that there be an increase in the rate of exploitation of the workforce through the wages-profit relationship. This is a contradiction that governments tend not to pay too much attention to, unless, of course, it leads to so much strike action that there has to be some intervention to stop that. So we have these ongoing contradictions in the way in which it's all going to play out, in my view. The issue of fact is that we've just had the first sign that there might be a reversal in the volume of productive capital spending by the private sector for a number of years. And that new data came out, delivered by the Australian Bureau of Statistics last week. Well done to all the workers there who do such a good job producing that information. Whatever its deficiencies in various ways, that's not their fault. But the curious thing, or the important thing about it, was the centrality in that lift in private sector investment of data centres.
Yeah, their investment's going into data centres, which, of course, is another really big environmental problem.
Yes, exactly.
They use incredible levels of water. It's just a disaster in the making.
It's not just data centres, but they were the big ticket item in the latest new data. And that, in some ways, has an encouraging aspect to it. But as you say, that means a more intense exploitation of nature because of its requirements for water, from water supply and electricity. So all of these things are contradictory. And so we're going to get a lot of conflict, a lot of tension around all of these things. And our union and environment organisations have to switch on and work out how each can say things about their priorities that are supportive of each other, directly supportive. And I think one of the interesting things in your interview with the activist from Newcastle was he made a point of discussing, from an environmentalist point of view, the participation and involvement of unions and workers in the actions in Newcastle.
Yeah, the future. We have to come up, we're coming to the end, so you have to do a final statement here.
Well, the final bit in this rough jigsaw, of course, is what happened with the Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Bill that is now an act of Parliament.
I know. Correct.
Now, my challenge to socialists like myself is that be careful of what you say until you've read it. I think it's beholden on us to be more sophisticated than we normally are and actually develop our critique of it on the basis of having read it. And the things that I would be looking for is firstly, and I have hunches about this, but I want to read it to be sure, is that does this actually reverse or just slow down the exploitation of nature? My hunch will be, subject to reading it, is that it's just slowing it down somewhat. Now, that's not a bad thing, because the character of the bill is that it's one that's been worked out with a very different role for the Greens. And that momentum shift is not insignificant for us who want to see things happen in a bigger way and a better way and faster. It's a momentum shift that is modest, that is holds some promise if we are smart about it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to finish it there, and we'll put a link to your article so people can perhaps make more comment directly to you about their thoughts on this particular subject. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
And watch out for what the Tasmanian socialists have to say about the new Macquarie Point Stadium in Hobart.
Okay, mate. Bye.
All the